month for me, I must say. But as I've said before, standing up here, seeing all these faces, hearing all the voices, if that doesn't cheer you up, then you need to get checked out somewhere. Because you can't help but be cheered up by it. So I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be sharing this. Don't know how long it'll be, but we'll see what happens. We're going to continue on in the look at the Kings. Today we're going to look at Azariah, as he's called, in the book of Kings, or Uzziah, as he's called in 2 Chronicles chapter 26. And that's where we're going to spend our time in 2 Chronicles chapter 26. And you might wonder, why are there two names? We've been down this road before. Uzziah means Yahweh is my strength. Azariah means Yahweh has helped. In Hebrew, the spelling is quite similar. Some people spell my name A-E-L, some people spell it E-A-L. There's only one right way, by the way, it's A-E-L. But some people have suggested that maybe it was just because of the similarity in spelling, this is what happened. Other people have said that one might have been just the more common name for him, his given name. The other one might have been the name when he was on the throne as king. So Azariah. Uzziah. Either one, I'm going to stick with Uzziah because it's easier and I can remember it a little bit better. Chapter 26, 2 Chronicles. We'll read the whole thing because it enrolls his life in one chapter. Then all the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in the room of his father, Amaziah. He built Eloth and restored it to Judah. After that, the king slept with his fathers. 16 years old was Uzziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah did. And he sought God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding in the visions of God. And as long as he sought the Lord, God made him to prosper. He went forth and warred against the Philistines and brake down the walls of Gath and the wall of Jabna and the wall of Ashdod. And he built cities about Ashdod and among the Philistines. And God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians that dwelt in Gerbaal and the Mahunims. And the Ammonites gave gifts to Uzziah, and his name spread abroad even to the entering in of Egypt, for he strengthened himself exceedingly. Moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gates and at the valley gates, and at the turning of the wall, he fortified them. Also, he built towers in the desert. He digged many walls, created much cattle, both in the low country and in the plains. Husbandmen also, and vine dressers in the mountains and in Carmel, for he loved husbandry. Moreover, Uzziah had a host of fighting men that went out to war by bands, according to the number of their account by the hand of Zeliel the scribe, and Messiah the ruler, under the hand of Hananiah, one of the king's captains. The whole number of the chief of the fathers of the mighty men of valor were 2,600. And under their hand was an army, 300,000 and 7,500 that made war with mighty power to help the king against the enemy. And Uzziah prepared for them throughout all the host, shields and spears and helmets and habergeons and bows and slings to cast stones. And he made in Jerusalem engines invented by cunning men to be on the towers and upon the bulwarks, to shoot arrows and great stones withal. And his name spread far abroad, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction, for he transgressed against the Lord and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. And Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him 80 priests of the Lord that were valiant men. And they withstood Uzziah the king and said unto him, It pertains not unto thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto the Lord, but to the priests, the sons of Aaron, that are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast trespassed, neither shall it be for thine honor from the Lord God. Then Uzziah was wroth or angry, and had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was angry with the priest, the leprosy even rose up in his forehead before the priest in the house of the Lord, from beside the incense altar. And Azariah the chief priest and all the priests looked upon him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead. And they thrust him out from thence. Yea, himself hasted also to go out, because the Lord had smitten him. And Uzziah the king was a leper unto the day of his death, and dwelt with several house, being a leper. For he was cut off from the house of the Lord, and Jotham his son was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. Now the rest of the acts of Uzziah, first and last, did Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, write. So Uzziah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the field of the burial, which belongs to the kings. But they said, he is a leper, and Jotham his son reigned instead. So that's it. There's an entire life summed up. You could do a eulogy at a funeral. That would be all you would have to say about him. It's pretty short, right to the point. I'll give you an overview if you want to follow along. For some reason, it repeats his age twice. I don't know why, just to emphasize maybe. He became king at age 16. He reigned for 52 years. So do the math on that, how old he was. He followed the Lord as his father has done. But as we heard from Jesse last week, that probably wasn't a good thing that he followed the same way his father did. And this also gives you the importance of setting an example to your children and to others around you. A funny thing here, when Daryl asked me to speak on this particular thing, I looked up the date and I realized it was Father's Day. The last time I stood up here, or Mother's Day, and today was Father's Day, and I thought, well, that's a bit of a coincidence. And Daryl responded, he'd been reading about a Jewish rabbi who said that in the Jewish language, there's no such word for coincidence. It's not a concept that they understand. So obviously, everything is God ordained, and as we learned last week, God has promised that there would always be a king on David's throne. It's not a coincidence that all these guys became kings. They continued the line, they continued it on, and eventually, of course, we get to Jesus. So, not a coincidence, all ordained by God. And that's an aside. So, as we look at Uzziah, we realize that he sought God. And when he did, we know that God gave him success. And so, he followed after God, he was very successful. In verse 8, we read that he actually had his enemies giving him gifts. His name was spread abroad everywhere, even to Egypt, so he became very famous in all of his accomplishments. He strengthened himself exceedingly. He was very powerful, he was a very mighty man in the area, but he followed after God. We also learned that he built towers, and he loved being a farmer. I like that. Husbandry says that he loved in verse 10. So he enjoyed the land. He wasn't a guy who was just going to sit and, you know, whatever, on the throne, be there, and just ignore everybody. It sounds like he was out, he was active. He was out part of the land, probably moved around a bit. But he loved husbandry, it says. It also says that he had a mighty army, thousands upon thousands of thousands. So he was a man of war, he was prepared for war. Planned for everything, and we find that in verses 12 and 13. It says that these mighty men, he had mighty power, and this was to help the kings. And what king can exist if he doesn't have an army to back him up? Because that means if he doesn't, some other army will come against him. He prepared everything. He thought about the consequences of his life. He thought about what it was like to be surrounded by enemies. So it says that he did all kinds of armament. So in modern day, he would have, would have equipped his army with the right guns, the right armor that they'd be wearing. He would have given them tanks and jeeps and missiles, whatever. And today, in those days, he gave them shields, he gave them swords, he gave them slings, whatever it happened to be, bows. He was well prepared. He invented cunning. It says cunning men invented engines. I don't know what that is, but I suspect because it says it was on the bulwark on the walls, it might have been things like catapults. Nothing better than having a catapult down the wall to throw rocks at people. Or if they did the opposite, and sometimes during the Middle Ages, they took dead bodies from the forces that were attacking, and they threw the dead bodies over the wall into the walled city. That's one way to get their attention. So this guy, he's well prepared, he made himself powerful. He was making sure that he was protected, nobody was going to get to him. So these special weapons were there. He probably wouldn't have been popular in today's world with any special weapons. Verse 15, he says, his name spread far abroad, and he was marvelously helped till he was strong. And that last little thing got me. It says, he was marvelously helped until he became strong. I had to think about that for a little bit. Why only till he became strong? Well, we know that when he was struggling in verse 16, that his heart was lifted up to his own destruction. What happened to him? He got to think, I'm the big guy, I'm the beyond and end all, nobody can touch me. It's basically what happened. And he goes into the temple, says he transgressed against God. And what did he do? He tried to burn altar. Tried to burn incense on the altar of incense is what he tried to do. So he thinks, I'm the king, I'm mighty, I'm powerful, nobody can touch me. Hey, what's to stop me from going into the temple and burning incense as well? Why not? I'm the big guy here. But it says that he transgressed. So he was marvelously helped until he became strong. So strength doesn't necessarily equate to being righteous. It means you might be powerful, but it doesn't protect you from everything in your life, having everything that he had. So he goes in here, and we read that 80 priests, the fourscore that were there, 80 priests of the temple rushed him. So one guy, 80 priests rushed him and said, you can't be here. This isn't your place, in verse 18. This is not your place. This is only for us or descendants of Aaron. We belong in here. We do the incense. You're not supposed to be here. How do you get out? You're like, what are you doing here? This is so wrong. So they rush him. In verse 20, we read that he got very angry. They tried to rush him out of the temple, and he got very angry with them. He had the censer in his hand to burn the incense. And while he was angry with them, leprosy broke out on his forehead. And so all these guys would have seen that. And of course, bad enough, he shouldn't have even been there. Now he's brought leprosy into the holy place as well, which makes it even worse. So, and the priests all see this. They see this happening. They're probably waiting for, to be struck by lightning or something's going to happen. It doesn't look that it's going to be good for him. So, in the case of leprosy, there's a lot of things that would happen to him. So he gets angry with them, but then he realizes, this is not good. I've got this on my forehead here. And he hastened in verse 20 also to go out because the Lord had spoken. He realized, uh-oh, I have messed up here. And so he rushes out of the temple. In verse 21, it says he was a leper until the day of his death. And of course, the Mosaic law would have isolated him. And if you read about days when they were wandering in the desert, what they did with a leper, they put them outside the camp. They burned their clothes. They did all kinds of things. They had to cleanse the leprosy. And so he would have been isolated. It would have been like COVID for him. He would have been isolated from everybody else. He'd be stuck in his own little place. He would have been ignored. And it would not have gone good. And nobody really knows the timeline, but effectively his son takes over, whether it's at this point in time or later, but his son takes over and becomes the king, whatever age he happens to be here. So that's kind of a little bit of run-up of what's happened in his life, what happens to him. But a couple things I want to look at. Proverbs chapter 8. And this is where our focus is going to be this morning, the main point of all this. Proverbs 8:13 says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the forward mouth do I hate. Pride and arrogancy is what happened. And to stay there, or go over to Proverbs chapter 16. Some of you can probably quote this one quite easily. Proverbs 16:18. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. So we're going to be talking about pride here. And everything we learned about the man, he was proud of what he had done. He was so proud that he thought nobody could touch him, that nobody could do anything with him. And pride made him very arrogant, made him thinking he was as good as the priest. He could go in, he could just walk into the temple, do whatever he wanted, and it would be okay. As I mentioned already, we hear a lot about pride. We hear a lot about it this month. You know, it used to be Pride Day, Pride Week, Pride Month, then we have Pride Season going on. And actually, it's funny, straight sort of way. One of my tenants is the head of Pride PEI, who organizes all the Pride events at PEI. So the restraining time in that one. But as we've seen in Proverbs, pride goes before fall. That all of this pride that we see in the world, all this people talking about their pride, eventually that will fall. It will come to ruin. You can only lift yourself up so much. When we boast about ourselves, when we build ourselves up, we try and draw attention to ourselves, eventually the faults will be found and the fall will happen. Whether it happens today, tomorrow, 20 years down the road, it will happen. And we know, some of us, from personal experience, at least from my own personal experience, you know, what pride can do to you. You may not have experienced something like this, but I'll tell you a little bit about my life. About 13 years ago, I was working for a company. It was the peak of my 30-year sales career. The company was known as Ecolab. They are the largest sanitation-related company in the world. There are 47,000 employees, $14 billion in sales, so not a tiny company. And every year working for that company, I met my goals. I had, Michael, you've got to sell $400,000 worth of product this year, okay? Michael doesn't. Or I came close to it, but I sold more than the previous year. Because of this, we end up having these meetings, get lots of rewards, and have these crystal eagles and diamonds and other weird stuff that, you know, they're all pretty company blue and things like that. They're all fancy things, and they look impressive. I remember going to my boss's home office, and his whole wall was just one of the first times I started working with the company. I go, wow, that's impressive. This guy's good. And so I started collecting these as well. And in my own eyes, quite rightly, I thought, man, I'm something else. This is something really to be proud of. I'm this cool guy. I'm an Ecolab territory manager. Ecolab's going to shoot me for missing their names and much. But anyway, I felt I was the top dog. I was the top of my game. And quite frankly, I did. When I got hired by them, I went from a little regional company selling cleaning supplies, hospitals and stuff, nursing homes, to this big, huge, multinational company. And I thought, can it get any better than this? And actually right now I'm supposed to be retired with the company, but as you can see, that hasn't happened. But one day, the vice president of the company decided he didn't like me. He was vice president of Montreal. And as my late father would say, he took a hate on to me. That's one of my father's favorite phrases. If somebody didn't like it, took a hate on. And that's basically what he did. He decided he was going to fire me. Well, he didn't. He had my boss do it. But anyway, my boss was actually in tears firing me because he didn't want to do it. But just like that, I was unemployed. So here I am, making six figures, nice car every couple of years, all this fancy stuff. Now I'm standing on the street unemployed. So what do? Well, if you're a man, and I'll speak to men because women don't act this way, we have a hard time with this. As men, we identify with our jobs. I don't know why that is, but it's part of who we are. We tend to see our jobs, our work, as our identity. We tend to get wrapped up in it. But I know it's something that men in particular tend to struggle with, maybe not all men, but some more than others. Who we are becomes, our job becomes who we are, and it becomes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you only have to ask my wife and kids that I ate, breathed, slept, the company, and I was on call 24 hours a day. But it becomes who you are, and you identify with that, and this becomes the struggle. You take away the job, and then what's left? That's what happened. All of a sudden, I'm standing on a street corner with no job. So, you have to deal with that. And a little side note, the guy that fired me 6 months later, he got demoted because what he had done was not right, wasn't within company policy. I never got my job back. But he got knocked down the rungs quite a bit. And I got basically paid not to work for 18 months, which is the best vacation I ever had. A little paycheck every week, didn't have to go to work. It was wonderful. A great lawyer for that one. But at the same time, it was humbling for me because it made me realize my job isn't who I am. My job isn't the be-all and the end-all. The pride I had in my job isn't who I am. It doesn't identify me. But my job was quickly taken away from me, and I had to deal with it. So this pride is there. What do you do now? You know, do I take a lesser job? Well, anything in that field was going to be downhill for me, that's all it was. But it's a funny thing about pride, and it does a lot of strange things to you. And you guys just think about when you're required to let you fill in your own blanks. Anybody notice what King Uzziah's reaction was in the temple? What did he do? What was his reaction when he got caught? What's that? He got mad. He got angry. Right? Not unusual. Why did he get angry? Exactly. Someone called out his sin, is what happened. He got angry because he got called out. He thought he was equal to the priest, that he deserved, and he showed him where he was wrong. And that's a typical reaction to a lot of us. When we get called out on something, no matter what it is, whether it's at work, you know, somebody points out something, a mistake you made, a lot of times the reaction is to get angry. Not like, you're putting me down, or whatever it happens to be. Or if you're a two-year-old or three-year-old, you can talk better, and you get called out. What's the first thing a kid does? You take a kid, you show them where they're wrong. You know, I didn't do that. You know, they're standing there with ink all over their hands and stains on the wall. No, it wasn't me. And then they get angry if you push it even more, and get angrier, and they stomp and go off to the rooms or whatever they have to do. That happens to 75-year-olds as well, not just two-year-olds. It happens to everybody because that tends to be. That's our ego. That's our pride. You know, you have insulted my pride. You've insulted me as a person. That's how we feel about that. And pride does that to us. It did this to the king here. He thought he could do whatever he wanted. And they called him out, and his first reaction was to get angry. Strangely enough, he didn't call in his military and slaughter all the priests because then he realized he also was wrong. For pride can ruin relationships. It can destroy companies. One company I'm very familiar with BlackBerry, and you only have to see how that could ruin for them. They were the best, the hottest thing going years ago. Everybody had a BlackBerry, one of them, I had at least 10 of them. They were the coolest thing to have. You had a BlackBerry, you were cool. One time even President Obama had a BlackBerry, so that was considered cool. And they cruised along, top of the market, everything was great, feeling quite good about themselves. Coming sneaking along was this little thing called an iPhone. And they just ignored it, thought, you know, we're the best thing going. I don't know if anybody still uses a BlackBerry, because then they left it there, they're a few years old. But their pride, their hubris, they're thinking nobody can touch us. And they went down from $270, I think their share was, to a penny stock, literally only worth pennies. So that's how far the media have fallen with their pride. But this happens in all aspects of life. It can happen in marriages. One of the biggest failures in marriage is because of pride. And it's the one scary thing when you see people getting married is, are people going to be able to put their pride aside and not go, well, no, I don't squeeze the toothpaste that way, you know? Or I don't fold my clothes that way. Or no, I don't iron my clothes at all, whatever it happens to be. And we get all caught up in these things. You guys are married, you know this stuff, it's true. We get all caught up and we get thinking, I'm going to change them. Or we get thinking we're so good, and then we get into the marriage and we think, I deserve better than this. Of course I do. You know, I'm so great. You know, I deserve someone better for me. Or he's not good enough for me. Or she's holding me back from what I want to do. Or he's never wrong. He's never right, whatever it happens to be. If you love me, you would. There's a great pride one. If you love me, you would. That's pride through and through. That's all there is to it. It does happen, folks. But it's all because our pride is in there. So it can work in all kinds of relationships. It works not just marriages. I mean, families, kids, work situations, whatever it happens to be. If you're a Christian, you know, how many times, I'm a Christian, people don't want to hear that. They want to know that you love them. It's like my tenant, who's not only the head of Pride PDIs, he's also the head of the Transgender Network. I don't discriminate against her because I have no right to do that. I don't treat her any differently than the rest of the tenants. I sit down and have great conversations with her. So we need to realize that we can be proud in a lot of things. You can be proud that you're a father. You can be proud that you're a mother. You can be proud that you're a grandfather or an uncle or an aunt or a brother or a sister. You can be proud that you're single and not like those other ones. You know, whatever it happens to be, we can take these relationships, these ideas, and build ourselves up. Now, you can have parental pride. There's nothing wrong with it. You can be proud of your kids, but not to the point where we think, my kids are better than your kids. Your kids do this, and my kids don't do that. You know, my kids are homeschooled, your kids aren't. You heard that argument. It's arrogance, and it's pride again, and it shouldn't be there. You know, it doesn't really make any difference. Quite frankly, most kids are idiots when we're trying to raise them, and we're idiots as parents trying to do that because we all fail. And the sooner we all realize that, the better we all will be. That they will fail, we will fail. And the hardest thing you have to do with your kids is to go to say, I'm sorry, I failed. I should have done this, I didn't do that. A lot of parents don't do that. They fail to recognize that their pride keeps them from admitting to their kids that they could be wrong and their kids could be right. My kids, thankfully enough, don't mind telling me when I'm wrong. Yeah. You can get pride over many things. And I know I'm belaboring this point. Pride in what you drive. Pride that you've got a bigger house. Pride that you drive a Tesla. Pride that you have this, you have a horse, whatever it happens to be. You get the point. Anything can become prideful. Uzziah found out that there were repercussions for his pride, and he got dragged down very low. Now, this may not necessarily happen to you, because there have been a huge burst of pride in your life, but then again, you might lose your job. You might end up being physically disabled. You might have a lot of things happen to you because of pride. Lots of things. Sometimes God has to do things in our lives to get our attention. You know, God's not being mean. But in this case, he struck him with leprosy. What happened? He didn't get to reign as king, I don't know how many years, but he became, we say, oh, they're a leper in society. Well, there's a reason why, because you're cast out. You're not part of the general population anymore. You're not with community. You know, you're not here. Like, for instance, if I was in a wheelchair, I would have a hard time being up here right now. So, in some ways, I would be excluded from this community because I couldn't get in the door and I couldn't get up here. I'm not saying you should necessarily build ramps here, but that's how easily people can get excluded. But we do it deliberately sometimes. So when we get pride, when we get thinking that we're so good, we can also do this in the name of Jesus. We can claim that we're doing this for God's greater good. We're doing this to serve the Lord. But of course, what did Jesus say? There's a day coming. And he said this in the sheep of the goats, where people will say, Lord, Lord, and what did Jesus say? Get away from me. I don't know who you are. I never knew you. Not only I don't know who you are, I never knew you. You were never part of my family. You mean to say that to your kid. A kid comes to you and go, hi, Dad. You go, get away from me. I don't know who you are. I never knew you. And this is how we think sometimes. We think, well, I'm part of God's family. I'm a Christian. I'm saved. But there's coming a day for some people where he'll say, I never knew you. And we can claim to do things in God's name. We do that a lot. But when we claim to do these things, does God get the glory? Do we stand out there fighting for Jesus or fighting for ourselves to be noticed? If he's not glorified in what we do, then it's a waste of time and effort. It doesn't matter what we do. He set us to, you know, do all things to the glory of God. That's exactly what it means. It means whether we eat, whether we drink, whether we sleep, whatever we do, God should get the glory in it all. Much like his father, Uzziah ended up being shamed at the end of his life. And if you look at the last verse there, it emphasizes that. It says that he was buried in the field which belonged to the kings. But the comment was, he is a leper. That's a final comment on this guy. He was a king, but he is a leper. He's still an outcast. Even though he's buried here, he's still considered a leper. And we have to ask ourselves, do we want to hear well done, good and faithful servant, or do we want to stand before God and he says, get away from me, I never knew him? And we have this choice, and it's a hard choice because it means putting our own pride aside, our own egos aside. Do we follow God? Do we do his will? Do we seek him? Do we trust him with all our hearts and lean not on our own understanding? In all our ways acknowledge him and he shall direct our paths. Do we do that? Do we give God the glory for all the great things he has done? That's a question. Charles Spurgeon said, one of the greatest works of grace in the heart is to humble our pride. And it's one of, when you see that, it's so great to see it. When you see someone who God works and knocks all that pride out and makes them very thankful and very willing to give God the glory. Philippians chapter 2 says, if, always look for the ifs in the Bible, if then there is any encouragement in Christ, if any consolation of love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any affection and mercy. So if these things are happening in your life, in the life of people around you, if there's any way we can encourage each other, if there's any way we become consoled and praying for a sister who's not doing well, if there's any fellowship that we have together here, if there's any way we show affection and mercy for each other, Paul says, make my joy complete by thinking the same way, having the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. And what is that one purpose? To do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility consider others as more important than yourselves. It's hard to do. Consider others more important than yourselves. Everyone should look not to his own interests. In other words, it's not about you, it's not about me. It's me taking care of you, you taking care of me. Everyone should look not to his own interests, but rather to the interests of others. And I can say quite honestly, I've seen that from so many people here, so many people who have come aside, who have been encouragement, have been there various seasons over the last number of years. And actually, I'm still going to be leaning on you because there may be a few more changes in my seasons of life over the next few weeks. But I'm thankful for that, that there's a love, there's a grace, there's a lack of egos from so many people here, that people want to go help out, they want to show mercy. They want to lift God up, let him be glorified and not themselves. And so I just encourage you by, don't be like King Uzziah. Don't be the one who gets struck down with leprosy for your arrogance and for your pride and thinking you're better than everybody else, and give him the glory and everything. Father, I thank you for each one here. Thank you for the love that is shown. I thank you for the mercy that is given. It's so undeserved so many times. I thank you for the patience, for the long suffering, for the willingness to bear one another's burdens. But I also know, Father, that we're not proud of this. We're not standing out on the street corner saying, what a great church we are. But we're willing to give you the glory, and we pray that you will continue to humble us and to give you the glory and all.